Leaning into my generalism literally changed my life. It has opened all these doors, and I've seen this happen for hundreds of people in the community. I see a personal brand as something that nobody can take away from you.
But you're kind of always like reinforcing, here's who I am, here's what I'm about.
It's yours. It's an asset that you own, and it's an asset that you control.
The more you talk about it, the more it does sound like this response to, you know, the career anxiety of the modern knowledge worker, where it's like, am I going to be replaced? Like, how does Millie make her living?
It's long term or nothing. So many people don't think like that. It's really hard to stand out today. This is like something that makes it memorable.
Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. My name is Francis Zier, and today I'm speaking with Millie Tamati, founder of Generalist World, which is a community and learning platform for people who identify as generalists, as a type of worker. What Millie has done in terms of turning this into a thriving business and truly participatory community over the last 3 years is really impressive. I learned a lot from her in this one. Thank you all too. So you do speaking engagements, and I was looking at your website where you list the things you like to talk about. And one of your, I think it was 3 or 4 topics you list that you like to get into is how to build a defensible personal brand that pays dividends. I would love to hear some of the principles you have around this. I have noticed, like, in the podcasts you've appeared on and in your LinkedIn, like, you have a lot of message discipline, and you, like, really, I think you embody this defensible personal brand. So how do you tell people, how do you talk about how to build defensible personal brand?
That's so interesting that that's come across, because I don't think it was an intentional thing to begin with. I think a defensible personal brand for me came about out of necessity. So I live on this really remote island. I wanted to still be an internet person and to make money on the internet and to make a living from the outside world. And I realized pretty early on that was going to be very hard to do if I wasn't visible, if no one could find me, if no one could trust me, if no one knew my story or what I was about. And so I guess I may have gone this a little contrarian to how other people build a brand. I think if you're following the gurus, there's like systems and schedule this. That, like, I was saying to a friend yesterday, I have never scheduled a post. And in fact, it gives me anxiety even thinking about scheduling a post, because for me, a personal brand is a way to simply connect with someone, hopefully lots of other people on the other side. And the reason that I'm so bullish on it and the reason that I talk about it so much is because every day I wake up and people are getting laid off. There is like, this company's laid off 15%, this company's laid off 10%. And I'm like, even if you're really secure in your job, you just don't know. You truly just don't know. And so I see a personal brand as something that nobody can take away from you unless you get banned on LinkedIn or something. So obvs, don't be too like controversial, but as a rule, it's yours. It's an asset that you own, and it's an asset that you control. And so I see like posting every single day. I've literally posted for, I think, over 1,000 work days. Like, it's been a lot of posting. And I see this as an essential part of my job. I don't see it as like something that's just like a nice to have. I'm like, this is an essential key part of my job for the reason that it makes me defensible. It has led to speaking engagements. It has led to me advising different startups. It has led to all of our community members finding us, and in turn, we haven't had to spend anything on marketing. Like, why would I not keep investing in this brand? And yeah.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of it that's really interesting. One, I think the fact that you kind of led with your being remote and like needing to like be so loud to post, you know, for 1,000 work days or whatever you said, like that kind of drives the volume, the power, the frequency of your personal branding, of your social media posts, right? Like, that's really interesting, because I, like, living in New York, right? Like, I often wonder, like, oh, if I was to move somewhere else, would it be harder for my career because there'd be less people I can meet in person, et cetera. But I guess that is kind of almost a strength of not living in a city is like it forces you onto the internet. Another thing in there too, you use the word guru, and it's interesting because like looking at your work, I think of like you are putting out this idea of the generalist, and this is kind of this like totemic identity and philosophy that you are building your brand around and obviously building Generous World, this community around. And I couldn't help but make some connections to something like Tim Ferriss and the 4-Hour Work Week, or somebody I spoke to recently, Colin Rocker, who his thing is first-generation professionals, which the commonality between all these things is it's like this vision of what it means to work and a vision of a certain way of how to work, and like a community of like bringing like-minded people who identify with that way of working together. So it's like this idea of the guru, like you don't come across like guru as this like negative word of like almost like a multi-level marketing scheme type of like internet salesman, right? Like,
yeah.
You don't come across as that. You have like, you seem like a pretty normal person who's not trying to like, you know, recruit me into a cult. But all that to say, I'm curious how like this, what the seed of this generalist world thing is, because it is kind of this totemic philosophy of working today that you've built this business around. So like, when did that start? When did Generalist World start? What was the seed?
Just a side note, hilariously, we have been called a cult quite a few times, I think lovingly, but from the lens of our members are just so freaking jazzed to finally feel like they belong and to finally have like language to talk about their skill set. And which leads me, like I can loop that back to the seed of Generalist World, where I had been working in startups for like 7 years. I had had a punt a couple of times at starting my own company with some successes, some total flops. And I realized the thread that tied it all together was being a generalist, although I did not have the language for that at the time. I was calling myself like an all-rounder, the jack of all trades and the glue
hats.
Person, like many hats, exactly. And for a long time, it didn't matter because I was just like, I was fine. I was never short of work. And it was in 2021, I guess it was, when I first moved to this island and I was looking for a job. And I was like, what am I going to do on the internet? And when I was scrolling LinkedIn and Indeed, I was like head in my hands, like, oh, this sucks. I was like, these roles look awful. They're so specialized and just nothing got me excited. And I'm someone, as you can probably tell, I'm an excitable person. And like when I put my energy behind something, I do have a tendency to be able to like make things happen. And so I was like, oh, it just feels like a waste of everyone's time if I'm doing something that's not like that exciting. And so I was like, right, screw the like LinkedIn easy apply, whatever it is. I was like, I'm going to go straight to the CEOs and I'm just going to like find problems that look really interesting. And I'm just going to be like, hire me. And here's why you should hire me. And it was during one of these conversations with a CEO of a mental health tech company that we headed off. She was like, yep, would love you for you to come work with me. And then she came to the thing that every generalist has experienced, where she was like, but where do you fit? Are you product? Are you content? Are you strategy? Are you like, where do you fit? And I was like, it was the first time I'd ever said this. And I said, I think it's in your best interest to not try to make me fit anywhere. Just give me the job, like, and I will come in and I will work across those different functions. I will, we can kind of figure out what this role looks like, but I will be your right hand. And she said, great. And then I actually remember in the message, she said, ah, that makes sense. Like, I realize that your strength is that you don't fit into a box. And it was like, click, 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 like all the light bulbs in my head. And she gave me the role director of miscellaneous. That was my contracted title that I was hired for. And that was the seed. That was the seed of GW, because I thought, huh, well, one, if I'm a director of miscellaneous, like surely I'm not the only one. Like it would be really neat to find one other person or maybe two. Like, gosh, maybe there's three of us in the world. That would be so cool. It turns out there's a lot. And then the other side of it is, wow, companies could really do with more of these director of miscellaneouses, however you say the plural of that. And the convergence happened as well when there was like a big round of layoffs in like 2022, also post-COVID. Everyone was questioning, what am I doing with my life? And from there, generalist world has kind of just like really taken off. However, when I started it in 2022, I have these distinct memories of feeling so embarrassed of saying what I was working on because people thought it was so dumb. Like people were like, what do you mean a generalist? Like that's not a good thing. You need to specialize. Like if you want to be taken seriously, you need to specialize. And I just disagreed. I really disagreed. And then I think with the rise of AI, it's taken like all this time and me really flying the flag, but now the tide is turning so much. Like just this week, I've heard the CTO of HubSpot, Dharmesh, the CEO of Every, Dan Shipper, and the CEO of Replit, whose name escapes me, all say more or less the same thing. Generalist, 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 generalist. This is where it's at. This is what the CEO of Replit was like, I'm going to teach my kids just to be more generalist. I had to stop on my podcast because I was like, oh, like the world is finally catching up to what we have known all along, that generalists are really, really valuable.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple things. One, this is exactly what I was talking about with your defensible personal brand. You're hitting on a lot of notes here that I've seen in a lot of your LinkedIn posts and in all of your podcast appearances where you you talk about the director of miscellaneous role and you're talking about this rise of generalists, which you're very good at hitting these notes. And I knew you were going to do this now, right? It's a perfect illustration of the defensible personal brand. You know, another word for this is just message discipline, where you have these notes and you find it's you're like a politician. You find a way to get them in and remind people of it, which is how you have to act to build a personal brand, right? When a politician is campaigning, it's the same thing. So one, I think for any listener, this is like a great example of what you're supposed to do to build a good defensible personal brand is you have these things and you constantly remind people of them, right? One thing I was taught when I was first learning to do marketing stuff is nobody, like, don't worry about repeating yourself. Like you have to be repeating yourself. You're going to get bored of it and you're going to be like, I shouldn't post like a version of this message again on LinkedIn or whatever. But the thing is, nobody cares. That's the first thing. Nobody cares about you, right? On the internet, you have to make them care. You have to like post the thing. You have to say it constantly. You have to like sear it into their mind that this is who you are and this is what you're about. So one, you're doing this exceptionally well. Two, I think I want to get more into your how you've built your audience and into generalist world for a second. But one word on this idea of the generalist, to me too, like it feels like. It's powerful that you name it, but it feels to me like this just, yeah, is the way of working now. Like I have spent the last 5 years working in startups, and in a startup, you have to have this malleability, this agility in what you do, right? Especially in a marketing role, as I've always been. It's constant pivoting. You like being able to like, oh, I can do something on LinkedIn. I can go into the street and shoot man on the street TikTok interviews, right? So I do agree with you that it's like, this is kind of this mode of working, which, you know, 100 years ago, you're on the factory floor at Ford and everyone has just their one thing. But it's like, it's kind of like the generalism is sort of this like evolutionary response just, yeah, to the lack of stability in work, which is what you're identifying. I want to talk about your social a bit more. So your audience, I'm seeing 21,000 on LinkedIn, 36,900 on TikTok, 6,300 on Twitter. And I would say the LinkedIn audience is the strongest. Tell me about your relationship with these three platforms. When you started with kind of basically zero on them, and then how the growth story on LinkedIn, TikTok, Twitter has gone.
Yeah, so the fastest one is the Twitter because I started it and then kind of fell off it for like 4 years, and I've only just started back like kind of or actually this week. So yeah, I find Twitter a funny place, and I still don't know how I feel about it. So that's kind of not where I focus my energy. My energy is much more focused on LinkedIn and on TikTok. And it's actually a really interesting question, because you're so right. The relationships I have with those two are completely different. The relationship I have with my crew is what it feels like on LinkedIn. It's like I have a really large group of what feels like friends, a really, really mm-hmm. large group. And there's a depth of loyalty that comes with LinkedIn. And a lot of people complain about the algorithm and like that I'm not getting all this reach, but actually what you are getting is loyalty. You are getting relationships mm-hmm. because people see you all the time. They trust you. They understand your consistent message. TikTok is the Wild West. TikTok I started on probably only about a year and a half ago, and there is no loyalty. There is like no loyalty at all on TikTok. It's not a thing. TikTok is one of my favorite playgrounds for experimenting. If you're a nerd, like if you're a nerdy experimenter, which I am, it's so much fun because it's just like playing the lottery every single time you post. And I'm someone that, I get a lot of, geeky, like joy and excitement of like, what, like of figuring stuff out. For me, the fun is in the figuring out of the platform, and video was a different frontier. I was like, what on short form? Like how does this work? So my advice for TikTok is to not take it too seriously. So like, you're not going to build these like really amazing close one-to-one relationships. You're probably not going to sell a lot on TikTok. I sell a lot more things on LinkedIn. Like I track all of this, so I know where my sales are coming from. They're not coming from TikTok, but what you do get on TikTok is people subscribing. So we have this like generalist quiz, and there is over, I actually checked just before this call, we just ticked over 30,000 people have taken this quiz, which is like completely wild because it was just a bit of a punt from us. And most of them, like I would say at least 20,000 have come from TikTok. So it's like they come from TikTok. If we can get them onto our email list, then we build trust because we send these twice a weekly emails, which like are full of value. So as long as we can get them on there, then we can build trust. But then really LinkedIn is where I like to think of it almost as an emerging plot. Like there's a plot, like a film that has been happening for 3 years. And every day I add a little bit more to the plot, a little bit more. And I don't know what the plot's going to be that day. And so people feel, I think, invested in the plot because they feel like they're a part of this film, this emerging film.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So a couple things. First, a little bit more on LinkedIn, then I want to get into TikTok and the quiz. So with LinkedIn, I think it makes sense that you do so well there. One, because your content is about work, and this way of working. LinkedIn is a job platform. And I get the sense that like people are also mm-hmm. attracted to generalist world because it like a way of like, well, how do I find meaning in my career? Like, how do I think about the future of my career and the security of it? Obviously, people go to LinkedIn to look at jobs. So very simple mm-hmm. there. I think the other thing though too is like you write these really long posts and they're good. Your character comes through. Again, it's the message discipline that comes through. And the way the LinkedIn algorithm works is like it's so unreliable, right? Like I might scroll, you know, mm-hmm. a couple feet down my LinkedIn feed. And it's like, here's something from just now. Here's something from like somebody that I work with, but it's 3 weeks old, et cetera. So the way that you write your posts, which are quite long, where it's like, there's always a bit of this reminder of like, I'm Millie. And like, here's, you know, I do generalist world. This is why I believe in the generalist as this type of worker. And then here's this thing that's on my mind today, but you're kind of always like reinforcing that here's who I am. Here's what I'm about. Now here's like the variable thing of like, you know, I just got back from this festival in Portugal mm-hmm. and I didn't look at my phone and this feels so good, but it's like, it's always bringing people back to that core thing, which I think is a good lesson of how to do LinkedIn is constantly, you know, the high volume, constantly reminding people of what you do. But okay, the quiz. So you told me, we spoke 3 or 4 weeks ago about doing this. And at that point, you told me that it had been up for just over a year and had brought in 26,000 leads. So another 4,000 in just a few weeks is pretty amazing. I think the quiz as a way to attract email subscribers to grow an audience online, it's very smart. And it's also not novel, right? It's BuzzFeed. And this quiz is like very much like a professionalized BuzzFeed quiz. I took it. I forget what my type was. What are the four types? Because there's a, it's like, what kind of journalist are you? What are the four types?
So it's connector, innovator, translator, or systems thinker.
Yeah, I was a translator. I was a 7 out of 10, I believe, translator. So that's
what I had. Nice.
But anyways, yeah, it's very smart because people want to know, well, what am I through this lens? So tell me this, you know, now 30,000 people have taken this. Is it from organic search? Is it mostly from TikTok? Where are people coming? And then the other side of this, right, to confirm is that anybody who does this, they're signed up for the newsletter.
Yeah. So the quiz came about because the one of the top things we kept hearing was, I think I'm a generalist, but I don't really know. And if I am, like, I don't actually know how to talk about my skill set. And so I was chatting with one of our members one day. His name's Romero. Shout out, Romero, legend. He is an organizational psychologist by trade. And he was like, you know, I think I could create something that would help categorize people and give them like something to hold on to and some language. This was the big thing, the articulation piece. Oh gosh, people really, really struggle with it. And we just thought, you know, let's give it a try. So I hired Romero. This is also, I think, maybe a lesson for like founders is like, know what your strengths are. When I looked at how to do the quiz, I was like, that's not my strength. My brain breaks at the like categorization of that. So outsourced it, hired someone I trust, and he is so much better than I would have done it. And so there's a lesson there that like, don't create a crap quiz. Create a good one.
I think also just to interrupt you for a second, I think that's part of like this generalist philosophy is understanding like where it's being able to like try doing a thing and know your limits and know where it's worth investing your time versus where, you know, do enough to understand what maybe the thing is, what the problem is, but also to understand that you're not the best person for the particular necessary solution.
Bingo. In action. Exactly. And so, yeah, we created it and it was a total punt. This is also Startup 101, right? You do lots of things. Some of them will work. This is one that worked exceptionally well. And yeah, it's been amazing. I can't actually remember the initial start of your question.
What was it? It was, I'm not sure what it was either, but I think it was something around, it was how have people found it? The quiz, how have people come to it? It's brought in, you know, 30,000 people on your email list. How did they discover it in the first place?
Yeah. So really simple. All of our links on social media, whether that's LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, they all link to the same URL, which is generalist.world/links. Mm. And whatever we're kind of pushing at the moment, there's like, I think at the moment there's like four different links to choose from. And there has been a few, particularly like TikTok and LinkedIn videos that have really popped, that have really resonated, and they would drive like most of the signups. So usually like once a week, maybe twice a week, I see it as my job to promote the quiz, to market the quiz. And the fun part for me, which probably lots of people would find not fun at all, is finding the different angles and being like, oh, what is the angle that's like really resonating with people? And I think the testament to this is we've actually just created a different quiz. It's called the AISkilledQuiz.com, and it was created by another member of GW because basically we were like, this worked so well. Let's do it again with more of an AI angle on it. And so it's only like a week old. It's very, very new. I think we've had 400 people take it. It's very new. And it's, again, my job to find out what is resonating. So if you are going on my TikTok at the moment, you're like, oh, Millie's doing some weird like videos trying to find this angle. And for me, this is part of the fun. It's the experimentation. And like, I would not be posting those videos on LinkedIn because that's my loyal audience, where TikTok feels like a sandbox where you can just like experiment. I just delete things if they don't like fly. It's no problem. But most people would be seeing a social post, clicking that link in our bio, which just has like multiple links. All of them are free things. So it'll either be like get all of our job opportunities each week, take one of the quizzes. At the moment, we're running a summer school with a bunch of like really cool brands. So that's also on there. That's like kind of our big campaign at the moment. And so the goal of that link is whoever clicks on it, there's something in there for them. Like if they've come this far, they're like, ooh, either like events or a quiz or, ooh, jobs. So whatever you need, we've got it. It's like a smorgasbord of options.
I think having the quiz in there makes so much sense because like, let's say there's no quiz, but it's like, here's our website, here's our job board, here's like our link to sign up for our newsletter, whatever. Like I'm so much likely to kind of slide away and just click away. But then when there's a quiz, it's like, oh, I've got no 2 minutes. Like I'm going to do that little quiz. Right. So I think that's really smart to have that as like a leader in your LinkedIn bio. Okay. I want to come back to a few things there, including the summer school, but we should talk about what Generalist World is practically in terms of, you know, there's the community, there's the newsletter, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So tell me kind of what the different parts of Generalist World are and what the audience size is for each. So I understand there's the newsletter and there's the Slack community. Mm-hmm. What else is there and how many people are in each?
Yeah. So the core of GW is our community, has been since day one. It is my favorite corner of the internet. It's also our moat. It's like the thing that is really, really, really hard to replicate. And the people inside are some of my favorite humans. And so there's around 600 members, and we just host that on Slack. Our email list is very, very close to 30,000. I think we'll probably cross that this week. And that's been all organic. Word of mouth, quiz has obviously been a huge driver. So that's been pretty neat. And then our social following is around, I think, coming up to 100,000. It's in and around that number. Mm-hmm. And so it's become like, I don't want to say surprisingly substantial, but when I started it, I really was just like, could I find like 2 or 3 or 4 other people who are generalists? And it's just kind of like grown arms and legs.
Mm-hmm. So the community, before we get to the community, how we get into the community, I understand that Generalist World basically has 3 products. And I was looking at these on the pricing page of the website. There's the positioning guidebook for $50, the unboxed tier, which is led by a course of the same name, has a few other things as well. That's $400. And then the community, which is $950. So that's a pretty large amount of people who have paid to enter the community, 600. Pretty impressive. Tell me, like, at what rate has this grown, the community? Like, has it just been pretty steady over the past 3 years or big spikes? Tell me about the intake into the community.
Oh, my gosh. I could do a whole seminar on this community because there's so much to it. So, like candidly, not everyone has paid $950. So, like, at the very beginning, 3 years ago, when I had no idea what it was, I was like, will anyone give me like $150 a year for this thing that I don't even know what it is? And some people, strangers on the internet, were like, here you go, Millie, here's our credit card. And for me, that was actually just incredible validation because I truly was like, I was not bullshitting anyone. I was like, I don't know what this is, but I feel like it might be important. If you also think that, please come with me. So the pricing has changed and we have experimented with everything from like 150 would be the low end all the way to, I think the most we experimented was about 1350. And I think when you're experimenting with price, I mean, that's like a 10x difference. The way that we've done that in a way that doesn't feel icky or gross, basically like raising your prices, is just to be really, really honest. Really honest. And again, bringing people into the plot, I think has been it. So people, I build in public, right? So people have come, I think, to really trust that I'm like genuine and I am genuinely trying to solve this problem and make the world better for generalists. And so they're on the ride. And I think they also realize, okay, the value has incrementally increased over time. For example, Unboxed, is a course we created, and we were like, is the course going to be the thing? We don't know if the course is going to be the thing. And so we've just kind of rolled the course into the community. And the goal is just to keep making the community ridiculously valuable. And I think I know this is working when for the last like 6 months, something's changed in like my founder psyche. And I started to love sales. I used to like sales used to give me like snakes up my back. I'd be like, oh, I don't want to do it. Like, how do I not do anything to not do sales? But this year, I've started to love sales. And I think that's because from my point of view, the community is so objectively valuable that when I see someone who fits like the profile, I feel like I'm kind of doing them a solid by just letting them know. I'm like, oh, you would actually get so much value. Like you would actually, you kind of need to come in. It would be so helpful for you. And that feels really cool. And then when you fulfill that and they are like, wow, this was life-changing. Wow, I've made best friends. Wow, I've got a new job. Wow, got a 20% pay rise, whatever it is. It just is like a self-fulfilling loop where I'm like, okay, so now it's like my responsibility as a founder to not sell, but to do the right thing by letting people who are the right fit know that we exist and know that the doors are open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing too, I think that helps build the trust. You do have on the Unboxed, you do have a 7-day money back guarantee, 30-day on the full tier. Tell me about like the experience of somebody coming into the community. Let's say the first week, do you have this like onboarding kind of flow set up, or, you know, here, I'm going to put you in this one, introduce you here. What does it look like if I come into the community my first week?
Yeah, it's so exciting. So firstly, if you wanted to come into the community tomorrow, you couldn't. We have cohorts. So we have about 3 cohorts a year. This year we're thinking we're going to do 4 because the demand has just been there. And we're like, why would we not do it if we can do 4? Mm-hmm. So firstly, there is like opening week. We call it Doors Open. It's just like a festival inside the community. It's always so much fun. There's a real buzz. It's like, ooh, who's going to join? And the caliber of people that join are always like intimidatingly amazing. So you know that there's going to be really interesting, like non-linear, amazing people coming in. And so they basically sign up, super simple. It's like a Stripe link. They'll get like the onboarding email, which we obviously all run through Beehive. And when they first arrive, they'll be getting like an onboarding message from our community manager. Her name's Edja. We call her the community queen for a good reason. She is amazing. And within the first couple of days, they're then going to get a welcome message from me. And this welcome message is a bit ridiculous. Founders always give me the side eye when they hear that I still do this. They're like, you probably automate that, or like you probably use AI. And I'm like, no, the point is I'm doing things that don't scale for as long as I possibly can. And so this welcome message is actually a video from me, and it takes me a minute, 2 minutes. It's not a long video. It's not a long investment of time, but I send it to each person. So each cohort, I'll send 80 plus welcome videos where I'm like, hi, name. And I will babble on for like, you know, a minute or two. And it's so amazing how much of a difference that video makes. Because I think everything is automated these days and everything is like efficiency focused. So when people arrive and they feel like, oh, wow, this founder cares, like actually gives a shit, like is actually going to like take the time to reach out and make sure that I'm getting settled. And I use that time to also set more about the culture, how we're a calm community. And it's these little touches. I will continue to try for as long as I can to like put these little touches in. And then that would be the first couple of days. Usually it's kind of like a fire hose for people. They're like, whoa, this is like, if you've ever been in a community and it's like crickets, this is not that. This is like, if anything, it can be actually too overwhelming. So we actually help people be like, we know that it's fairy, that people are so engaged and excited. So we help people find ways to engage in a way that feels good for them. And not everyone is like a typer, right? So there's like other ways. Maybe it's like connecting one-to-one. And then we always in our first kind of 6 to 8 weeks, we'll have masterclasses. And so we bring in hard to access experts and they run sessions. And it's a really cool way for members to start to upskill, but also like to hang out and to meet each other and like swap notes. We'll also do like a live cohort of the Unboxed so people can like form these little accountability groups. So the kind of the goal with the community, and Edja, oh, she just truly does like such an exceptional job, is to create these different ways that people can meet each other and these different ways that people can engage and find value. And now that we're a lifetime membership, it's such a no-brainer because we keep doing this 3-4 times a year. And it's like, oh, okay, so the value just like continues forever. So yeah, that's kind of what you'd expect in the first 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay, so a couple questions. One really quick one. When did you switch to the lifetime from the recurring yearly fee?
This year, very recently.
Oh, okay. Nice. And then I heard you talking on the other podcast, on another podcast you were on, about the idea of making it paid as a way of introducing this sort of friction to make people more inspired and like more accountable to actually participating, which I think is really important. When there's just a free community, you join the Slack, you look at it once, you never do something again. Yeah, that's one thing that can happen. And so I also think I really like the cohort aspect of another way of introducing this friction that inspires participation, that makes it feel special, that makes it feel limited, that gives people like a specific window, right? It's like, instead of asking a broad question, sometimes I try to do that here. Sometimes I try to ask very specific questions to get a very specific answer, right? It's hospitality is what it is. How do you like the kind of peer to peer in here? Cause you're talking about the programming you set up. Also these peer to peer sessions. But I think one flaw I often hear about with communities is like, oh, people stop participating, or like a community isn't healthy if they're expecting like, you know, the leader, not that you are like the only, you know, figurehead of this, but like the person who's kind of the founder of it, maybe they just want time from that person and they don't really engage with other people. So the question here is, how do you like make sure that people are participating in a peer-to-peer way and like forming these connections with each other that are the basis of an actual community?
That's a great question. When I look back at the very beginning of GW, I was very much the figurehead. I think at the beginning, communities do need a face. They need the person being like, community is just a culture. It's just like, this is the culture that we have here, and this is the vision of where we're going. And getting those early members was so key. And honestly, I think I was a bit lucky that the early members I got, and they're still there. We had like a first 100 club. As some of my like really, really good friends now, I've never met them, but they've been like our OG members of our OG of GW, it's all these acronyms. And having that early crew to form relationships with each other just sets the culture. So it's like, oh, okay, this is how we operate here. And it's taken a long time, to be honest. We're 3 years in, and it's only now that I'm able to step, I would say, to the side. I haven't stepped back, but I've stepped to the side. And now my role, in fact, I've kind of made myself redundant from running the community. Edja is now our full-time person. And I am still in there every day. People still like, because I just love to hang out there and I love the people inside. But in terms of actual community management, like half the time, I don't even know what's going on. Like Edja will just text me and be like, okay, we've got 15 local meetups this week. We're having a picnic in Copenhagen. We've got this thing happening in New York. I'm like, what? Copenhagen? That's so cool. And yeah, so I think having really key early members and becoming friends with them. Maybe there's other ways to do this. Generalist World is the first and only community I've built, so I don't really have any other like examples. But I became really good friends with them. There's a level of deep trust. And then how else do we do it? I think we are also lucky. It's a great question because it's making me think it through. We're also lucky that generalists by nature, I found to be very collaborative and very generous in their knowledge sharing. And I think because I often role model like light vulnerability, I'm not like bearing my soul and like, oh, this is all of me, but I'm honest. I'm very, very honest. That kind of trickles down or trickles into the community culture. So we will have, you know, we'll have everything from ridiculous like meme threads, which is hilarious. And it's just like all the comedians in generalist world come out to like these really deep, like, man, I'm struggling. Like I need help. Like I need like, what would you guys do in my scenario? And that could happen in the space of 10 minutes. Like they could both be happening in different channels. So even though it's like a career community, it's kind of just where you go to meet friends as an adult who have also had a similar career arc to you, but quite probably not the exact same. Like we have academics in Australia and, you know, tech operators in San Francisco, like such a wide variety.
I think one thing you said on another of these podcasts I listened to where you were the guest is that, you know, 10 years ago you were working as a tour guide. And so this seems like kind of the seed of what you do here, where you said that, you know, you were tasked every day or however many tours you did a day with making sure that these like people who didn't know each other and like were from different places could kind of laugh together. And it's like, that's something you have to model. I've worked like as a barista, and like what you do is the kind of hospitality you have, even just standing behind a counter selling coffee, kind of a similar thing of like it's your job to make these people feel welcomed and to like model the mood that you want them to have, whether it's a barista, like smiling and laughing and like, you know, making a joke, responding to a joke, whether it's a tour guide, like doing the same thing. Right. Like I think this is, which is very generalist perhaps. So yes. I don't know. I really liked hearing that seed that I'm hearing reflected in what you're saying now. Question, who are these people? You're saying a little bit, you know, maybe it's a tech operator in San Francisco. What are some of the rough demographic breakdowns of the people in generalist world? Where do they live? Who are they?
So most folks are from the US or the UK and Europe, although we do have a growing number of people finding us in Australia and New Zealand, and that's becoming a big focus for me. Because I am Kiwi, I'm like, yeah, let's get the down unders in. So that's very exciting for me. And most people probably work in tech or like kind of they're also internet people. They work online. They are often kind of like 7, 8, 9 years into their career. So I think there's like this generalist arc where at the beginning, you know, your early career, it's kind of hard. You're like trying these different things and you're trying to fit into the specialist box. And it's not till you kind of pop out in your mid-career that you're like, I guess that path wasn't really for me. So like, so now what, you know, now I've tried these things. I'm not following the specialist path. So gosh, where do I fit? And that's kind of when people find us. And when people say, oh, maybe I can find how I would like to spend, you know, the second part of my career. How might I like to spend that time? And to be honest, like the longer I spend in generalist world, you'd think I'd be getting more clarity on this. But the truth is often I get a little bit more confused because we will have people joining who, when I look at their profile, I'm like, you look like a deep specialist to me. Like, what are you doing here? Like, I say that with like love and curiosity, like, what are you doing here? Are you lost? And this is where it's so interesting that I think generalist, it can be something that you are, like, as you said, I'm a hardcore like generalist. I always have been, always will be. This is in my bones. But I don't think that is the case for everyone. I think that some people can see generalism as an approach and can say, huh, I actually think that's just a smart career strategy at the moment. So even though I'm this deep specialist, we have a professor in Australia, Shern, who I kind of referenced earlier, who has a PhD so long, He sent it to me. I was like, I can't even say that. I can't even say whatever it is that you work on. It's so long. But he recognizes for himself and for his students that he's teaching that the world is changing, that work is changing, and perhaps it's actually smart to be around a group of people who, it's like a think tank, who are thinking in this way, who don't have all the answers. Like, I don't know, like no one knows what's coming next. But I think generalists are historically pretty good at figuring it out. And so we're like, what if we just gather together? What if we just gather in the same place? We'll form these connections. We'll have genuine, like deep trust. And we know that this is a space where we can be really honest. And it just makes it easier when the world is a bit topsy-turvy to have those spaces where you can kind of figure it out together.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you said it's mostly people who maybe 7, 8, 9 years into their career, and like it's the way you say you identify as a lifelong generalist, and some people come in and you're like, you seem more like a specialist. Like, to me, it really is like the more you talk about it, the more it does sound like this response to, you know, the career anxiety of the modern knowledge worker, where it's like, am I going to be replaced? Like, do I need, like, what other skill should I be working on? Mm-hmm. And I see the same thing in like any creator I talk to, right? Like a good creator business is diversified across mm-hmm. platforms and across revenue streams. And it's just kind of like hedging for the future of like, I've got this other thing that I've tried a little bit that I could put more investment in if, you know, if the waters start rising over there. To that extent of, you know, diversified revenue streams, what are the various ways you make your living? Is it all just like paying yourself from the fees people pay to Generalist World? How does Millie make her living?
Yeah, so for a long time, memberships was our core revenue stream. That was our mm-hmm. core main revenue stream. And it's very recently that I have turned on sponsorships. I mean, we're nearly at 30,000 subscribers now. And there's been times over the years that people have like wanted to sponsor the newsletter. And this is going to probably, maybe don't follow this advice. I don't know. It worked for me. But like, I always felt a bit weird and icky about just being like, I don't even know this tool, or I don't even know this like brand, yet I'm going to put them in front of this audience that I've like blood, sweated, and tears over like bringing together. It never felt quite right. So over the years, I would say we've left actually a lot of money on the table by not taking on sponsorships from the beginning. And now that we're this deep in, I'm like, okay, well, what is my dream way of having sponsors? Like, we don't have to do it in the traditional way of like just selling each one. And I've basically made a very, very, very short list of like 4 or 5 brands. And I've spent years building relationships with them, not necessarily asking for anything, just making sure that we know like that we're on their radar. And so the first brand is Notion. And I mean, I, in fairness, did hound them for like 2 years and went through like 4 different people trying to get like my in. And now they've sponsored us and we absolutely hit it out of the park. And so they've sponsored us again. So for the next quarter, we're sponsored. And there's 2 more brands that I won't say until they're confirmed, but probably going to be very soon. And did the same thing where I was like, you're it. Like, you're it. I want you. Like, it's going to be great because I use you all the time. You're what I'm, it's just like the most genuine part. It's more like a partnership, a genuine partnership. And I think one thing I do quite differently is I just refuse now to do transactional. I'm this deep. I'm like, we're so deep. We're not doing any transactions, like long-term or nothing. And I had a very large brand, household brand name, come to me a couple of weeks ago pitching a partnership. And they did the classic, like, let's test it. And I now have the confidence to say, no, I'm not going to test it. I'm not going to put anyone in front of our audience. It's long-term or nothing. Mm-hmm. And their response was actually very interesting. They said, ah, I'm so glad you said that. So many people don't think like that. Most people don't think like that. TBD if it worked. I'm still waiting to hear back from them. But yeah, so basically, long story short, we memberships are our kind of our core that like just like pump all year round in these different cohorts. And now sponsorships, my goal for like the next like 12 months is to have that way overtake the memberships, to really give us some big cushioning and maybe even to grow the team a little bit.
Three follow-up questions here. One, so you've got this pretty well diversifying revenue in the business. How do you pay yourself out? How do you determine that part of it?
So I do the classic founder thing where in the UK, you basically can pay yourself 12 and a half grand and then it's tax free. So I do that. Mm. So I pay myself £12,500 a year, which sounds so low, and it is so low. But I can do that because I live on this island. My rent is, people are going to be annoyed. I'm going to get canceled for how little my expenses are. I'm not even going to say it because people are going to
let's be honest, you live in this very remote island that's like 170 people, right?
191. And I think it's an important point because living here is a choice, of course, like living anywhere is a choice. But living here whilst building GW is an absolute choice. And it's that I can continue to grow it and not put pressure on growing so fast or not put pressure on having to like take investment. I can do it in a way that feels really good because my runway is essentially forever. As long as I live here, I can keep building. So although, of course, it has sacrifices that I'm not in New York, I can't just go and meet these big brands or I can't go and meet my community members. But when I look at the big picture and when I take a step back, I don't think it's harmed us. In fact, I think it's only added to a story of like, what? Like, what do you mean? Where do you live? What do you mean this is where you've built it from? It's all a part of the story. And like, it's really hard to stand out today. So this is like something that makes it memorable.
Mm-hmm. I think it really is a good part of the story and adds to your brand. One thing about the sponsorships, this isn't sponsorships per se, but when I signed up for the newsletter, 5-10 minutes after I'd signed up and received the intro email from you, I received another email titled "Free Bonus 20K Savings on Our Favorite 8 Tools." And it's a short list of what seems like affiliate partner links. Some of the tools was Notion, Riverside, Zapier, Beehive. This seemed really smart, you know, hit people with this list right after they're most engaged. Does this do well for you? What's the conversion like on some of these?
Yeah, it's fairly new, to be honest. And I'd love to like see how it works over the next couple of months. But it, like, whenever I'm doing anything, the question that I ask myself is just, how can this be a win-win? Mm-hmm. How can this be a win for our audience or our community? How can it be a win for us? And ultimately, how can it be a win for the brand as well? Let's say it's Beehive, Notion, Zapier. And so I use that. I haven't really seen anyone do this, to be honest. And it boggles my mind because it's like, you can get commission and you can help people get savings on the tools they need. And maybe it works particularly well because generalists love tools and love ways of like they're working in tech, they're working online, and they love like to make their tool people. So TBD on what the like actual like financial outcomes are. But I think even if there's very little financial outcomes, I think it's just a cool way of like, again, just like giving a different type of value very, very early on, as you said, when people are most excited and most likely to open.
Mm-hmm. Another thing about these different tools, these different brands, this summer school, the Summer School of Generalist Skills you referenced earlier, currently ongoing. I think in your LinkedIn post announcing it, you are framing it and the sponsorship partnerships, really more like partnerships around it, as really this coup that you'd been trying to pull together for a while. And I think there was like, I don't know if it was all 8 of those brands, but some of the ones listed, Notion, Canva, Lovable, I don't know if they're all exactly partnerships, but tell me what this summer school is in terms of what it is both for your audience and how it adds value for them. And also from the brand side, how you've brought in these brands and pitched it to them.
Summer school. So internally, when I say internally, we're such a small team. It's like me and Edger. We have this rule of no new ideas because we're really, we love ideas. And so one day on a call, Edger and I had an idea and we were like, oh, dang, rules are made to be broken. And the idea was, I've spent all these years forming these relationships, as I mentioned, with these different brands. I have these different champions. Usually how I know they're going to be a champion is they say, I'm a generalist. And I'm like, great, come on in, let's be besties. And the key is you don't ask them for anything at all. You're just like, let's actually be mates. Let's be pals. How can I help? Mm-hmm. And so I've got all of these amazing brands in my inbox. But, and then we also have this crew of so many generalists who are hungry to learn. And we just, Edra and I just thought summer school sounded cute. And then we were like, summer school of generalist skills is so hard to say, but so adorable. Like, again, one of our experiments. And it's one that went bananas, that people firstly were like, Millie, how have you got all these brands? Like, how have you got these partnerships? It just takes a long time is the annoying, boring answer. It takes a long time to build these relationships. And we just pitched it like, hey, we have all these generalists who love learning. And would you be able to put together a really valuable session teaching a generalist skill? So it might be like we're having one on public speaking. We're having one on community building. We're having one on organizing your portfolio career or Notion. So it's like a skill, then using the tool. So it's like a win for the company, right? It's like, okay, sure. Like now we get to use Notion. And yeah, we launched it. We had one IRL event, which we've teamed up with Canva. Again, I just had this relationship with someone from Canva and I was like, hey, can we come and use your space? And so the IRL event sold out before we sent the email. I think it's 75 places and it's giving Edger anxiety. I think we have over 150 on the wait list for that event. And people were like, I'm going to fly in from New York. And I was like, no. Please don't. Like, we will run another one. Like, don't fly in across Atlantic. That feels more stressful to me. So we have the one that's in person and then all the other ones are online. And yeah, there's like 500 people plus signed up for all of them. And it's like, it's kind of funny because when you're building a business, at first you're like, oh, what will I do? And you have these ideas. And mostly you do what you thought you were going to do at the beginning. That's what I've discovered. We're like community, content, events. That's it. That's our bread and butter. Like, that's what we thought at the beginning. And that's what we have continued to do today. And for anyone listening, I'm not sure when this episode will come out, but like come along, join summer school. It's totally free. It's going to be a lot of fun. But the next campaign we're going to be doing is in September, which also started as a joke, like a joke in the community where we were like, we should have an international generalist day. And then we all cackled a little bit. We're like, oh, that'd be so funny. But then it happened and everyone started rallying and they were like, IGD, IGD. And it then became a completely out of control day, September 18th. And there was over 1,000 people all across the world who came together. Wow. And it, to me, the signal of both summer school and IGD is that people, I think particularly generalists, but I think people, there is such a craving for being in person and being around other really genuine, nice, kind, smart, cool, interesting people. And I think particularly for generalists, if they haven't felt like they've been able to fit in, if they've spent their entire career in spaces like trying to mask or like fit into a box, like I completely resonate with that. And then suddenly you just get to come to this event. And when someone asks, what do? They don't look at you weird when you're like, all these things and then some more. So yeah, that's where we're at.
Nice. So you were just talking about content and we haven't really talked about the content side of it much. And so there's two aspects here, the newsletter and then the podcast. And so I want to start with the podcast and then we can get into the newsletter. But the podcast, so there used to be Generally Curious, which was hosted by you and Lindsay Lerner. And now for the past few months, I believe it's been just Generalist World. And I know that one difference here is that the Generalist, I don't know if this is true of the Generally Curious podcast. I know it's true of Generalist World, is that the people you interview are all just members of the community. And so that seems like a pretty novel thing to me where it's like, it's really by and for the community. And like it's serving this really strong purpose of reinforcing the community. So tell me about these two podcasts and why Generally Curious became Generalist World.
Yeah. So probably two and a half years ago, Lindsay popped into my LinkedIn. This is the wonderful thing about building a defensible brand. People come to you and we basically hit it off. And she was like, I have a background in podcasting. I think Generalist World needs a podcast. And so we were like, let's just experiment with it. And so we ran this podcast for two seasons, which I think is about like 10, 15 episodes, something like that. And to be honest, like we never quite found what it was about. Like we were generally curious and we were interviewing people who were in the future of work, but we both never felt like, ooh, like this is the thing. Like this is the source that makes us different from all the other podcasts. And it's a curious one because we were getting fantastic feedback. Like the podcast people were enjoying, but something just felt like it wasn't quite working. And so we were like, let's take a pause. Let's take a hiatus. And earlier this year, Lindsay stepped back from GW and has been focusing on her building her own thing. And I kind of had this realization that why would I not just interview GW members? And I think founders, can't say all founders. I go through this where I just like overcomplicate it for the first bit where I'm like, oh, let me like innovate on all these different things where it's like, actually the flywheel is people come into the community. We tell their story, especially when one of the big questions is like, I don't know if I'm a generalist. How do I know what career path is right for me? I'm like, gosh, could it be as simple as one of my favorite questions? What if it were as simple as interviewing Generalist World members? That then amplifies them. Great for them, highlighting them, using our platform to amplify them. And then using that every Friday, that becomes the newsletter. And we send that out. And then more people read it. And they're like, maybe I'll become a Generalist World member. And it's like, I think I went through this cycle of like, okay, I'm going to overcomplicate it. And then you come back to the simplicity. And I found that simplicity is the thing that usually works. Mm. Simplicity is the thing that you can do something sustainably and for a long time. And maybe an interesting story for folks is I wasn't sure if I wanted to do a podcast on my own. I was like, oh, I don't know. I really loved like podcasting with Lindsay. I don't know if like I want to be the host. And so I set this ridiculous day where originally I was going to do 12 podcasts in one day. And the theory, my thinking was, if I can do 12 in a day, I probably enjoy it. So as you can tell, I do things by extremes. We ended up doing, I think we did seven or eight. And then I was quite literally on the floor. Like, I gotta call it there. Mm-hmm. It's so exhausting. It was too. And I realized that if I kept going, I was actually going to do no justice to the episode. I was like, I made up 12, like such a ridiculous number. But while I was on the floor, like just completely brain melting out my ear, I was like, wow, I still feel energized. Like in my body, this still feels like it was a really fun, amazing day. And so that was enough of a signal for me to be like, yes, let's keep recording. And so now, every Friday I release a new episode and it's all with Generalist World members, which is like, it's so obvious. And often the right thing is the obvious thing. I'm going to say that so that I listen back to it like all the times in the future. Keep it simple and go for the obvious thing.
That is great advice. That's really good advice. Okay, so the last little bit about the newsletter. The newsletter is twice a week, and it's the interviews that made from the podcast. And then what is the core function of the newsletter for Generalist World?
Yeah, so every Tuesday we curate between 40 and 50 jobs. Mm. And we do this totally manually. Again, people are like, you guys could probably find an AI for that. But the point is that we're actually scouring it and making sure they're a fit for this like generalist kind of archetype. So people will get every Tuesday, even if they're not job hunting, they're like, what's out there?
Yeah.
Like, what are the jobs in this generalist world? Great domain name. And so every Tuesday will be that. Every Friday will be the podcast. And then every now and again, and I make a point of not promising when they will be released, but I write essays. And those essays can take me months, truly months to write. And they take months because the essays are always very long and they're the result, the culmination of all these dots connecting. And I can't rush that, which is why I never promise like one essay a month. I've learned like, okay, the essay comes when the essay is ready to be written.
Yeah.
And so when the essay gets written, they usually do very well. Like they, I still see like the generalist value pyramid. There's like the structural whole theory. It's basically just me and my hot takes ranting for like 2000 words. So they happen occasionally.
Yeah. I read the generalist value pyramid one and it's very good. Okay. We have been talking for a while, so I'll give you one more question and let you go. A little bit of a broad one. I'm curious about the future of generalist world, and two things for context that I read recently that really make me curious is one, you two recent posts on LinkedIn. One was about that you're considering selling a minority stake. And then the other one was about this one you just posted 2 days ago or yesterday, rather, as we record, planning for motherhood as a business owner and like what you're trying to do to prepare generalist world for the possibility of you going on maternity leave. So these two things seem pretty combined. You've been doing this for 3 years. What are you thinking about for the next few years of it? Like, do you want it to be acquired? Do you want part ownership? How do you make this a thing? It seems like you care about it a lot, and this is, you know, you're very invested in it. I'll stop talking. What is the future of generalist world over the next 3 years?
I think finding out and leaning into my generalism literally changed my life. It has opened all these doors, and I've seen this happen for hundreds of people in the community. And so the vision for me is just to keep doing that, to build an absolute like beast of a workforce, of this generalist workforce. And I think we're uniquely positioned to do that. There's a lot of trust in the market. So that's kind of on the generalist side. I'm like, I just want to keep helping people do what we've been able to do and lean in and see that all the amazing things that unlock from there. As for motherhood, yeah, I was crapping my pants to post that, to be honest, because I was like, oh my gosh, people are going to think that I don't even care about my current baby, which is like weirdly generalist world, or they're not going to be so invested, or they're going to judge me. But I figured this is one of my philosophies with social is if I'm thinking it, probably someone else is. And it is the most effective post is when you just say the quiet part out loud. And again, you just be more honest. It's not being controversial. You're not doing it to like polarize. You're just saying the thing without mincing your words. And often that like resonates with people. So how I see the future of generalist world is an emerging thing. That's the answer. Like, I don't know where it leads. I don't know if we get acquired. I have a body response to that of like a fear. I've seen so few communities work like getting acquired. So like that freaks me out a little bit. But in my perfect world, in my generalist world utopia, this thing keeps going. This is just a sustainable decades long thing that evolves. And one way that might happen is through the community acquiring some, I don't know how it works, some kind of stake. When I posted that, there was a big response from the community saying, yes, let us buy it. Yes, let us invest. So that's totally an option on the table. But I kind of want to prove that business doesn't just have to be this like super capitalistic, extractive process. Like it can be driven by community. Hopefully it can be owned somewhat by community. And I also want to prove that I'm not a mum yet. I'm not a parent, but I would very much like to be. And I kind of want to prove that you can do both. Like, I have a couple of role models, some like mum and business owners, but like not loads. I would love to have more. And I think that I could be part of the solution to just telling that story. And I don't know exactly what that looks like, but if I could find ways to continue to grow the movement, continue to help lots and lots of people, hopefully even more as we progress, continue to help companies see that they don't have to squeeze people into boxes. And in fact, it can be in their best interest, just like the director of miscellaneous role, to actually help people lean into their generalism. And if I can do that while also having the time, life, freedom to be a parent, and not even just be a parent, but just like have a life, I think like, yeah, work-life balance is a funny one, but it's so important to me that this job, that I don't like create just a job for myself where I am constantly working. It's like, okay, the whole point is freedom and the whole point is autonomy. Yeah, but the TLDR is, I don't know. And I think it's absolutely fine to say that it's like, this is emerging, and follow me on LinkedIn because you'll be a part of the plot as it emerges and as I figure it out as well.
And that's generalist world. Millie, thank you for coming on. This was such a good conversation.
Thank you so much. This was awesome.